You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 362 and the start of our 10th full season of the podcast. Today is Sunday, April 16th, and my name is Steve. No Ham tonight, but I am joined by Curtis. And Kurt, in tonight's show, we'll talk about our first impressions of the new park, the Braves' 4-1 week, and Inciarte's home run tear. But first, a quick break. The Braves officially opened their new home this weekend. Curtis, you and I were there together Friday night. I returned on Saturday night, and you returned on Sunday afternoon. So, what are your first impressions, man? What do you think of the park?
Aesthetically, it looks great. It checks off lots of boxes for people. Obviously, the Battery was a big part of the park, that they were going to have the entertainment aspect, the restaurants and all that stuff. You and I ate dinner or whatever it was on Friday night at the Yard Shop. Yard House, sorry. It was great. The customer service throughout the park was great. There's lots of cool little things going on as part of the park. Obviously the opening night stuff was really cool, having all the guys that have had their numbers retired other than Greg Maddux. And of course the players that have passed away, obviously there. I mean, it's a great looking park. I will say, complete honesty, that I left my house at like 3:40. The traffic was not bad at all. I live, as you and I have both discussed, we both live sort of nearish to Turner Field. It was probably a 40-minute ride on Friday. Today, 30 maybe. So that not going to be a massive issue. I as far as what I've seen so far, and I'm very happy to report that. It's, I guess the one thing that I don't like about it is that it's just sort of sterile to me. And maybe it's more of an indictment on Atlanta, that we don't really have something about Atlanta that, you know, you think about that stands out as really exemplifying Atlanta. And maybe their corporate things like Coke or Delta or something like that.
You're forgetting about the Chick-fil-A cow, Kurt.
Right. The Chick-fil-A, which are all Cokes there. Delta's there, you know. Chick-fil-A is there. They're all represented. Waffle House is there. It's just that there's nothing that it's a beautiful park, but there's just no sort of unique qualities to it as a building. Sort of like a suburban mall to me.
I mean, I guess I agree with that, but whereas I found the TED, particularly like the concourses, just without any energy or anything really pleasing aesthetically, I just think that the whole park is beautiful, whether you're on the outside of it with, you know, the bricks that are reminiscent of Turner Field, or the bricks with all the, you know, all the names and, you know, the sayings and all that stuff on those things, the statues around it. I love what they did at the, you know, at the entrance near the Chop House with that bridge that says Atlanta Braves. And, you know, the big, that, I don't know, that sort of globe thing that spins around.
Right, baseball.
The baseball, that green space. To me, I'm not with you on this, that it feels sterile. I think it's warm and homey in there. And look, I loved it. I really loved the park. The seating was great. You and I both, when we walked in Friday, and we both had outfield seats in different places. I mean, I could not believe we were like 2/3 of the way back in right center. I could not believe how close we were to the field. And I know we walked over to where you were in left field, and it was the same thing. I mean, it's just crazy.
And I had a different perspective today. We sat, like you mentioned, we sat in left center for, and I don't want a lot of criticism. I do. It's a beautiful park. So I made that very clear. I don't want a lot of hate mail coming back. It is a beautiful park. We sat today sort of down the left, down the left field line, sort of between left field and third base. And, Yeah, it's a great vista. We sat under the shade, so you had the overhang, but you could see the field. Again, you felt right on top of the field. It was, you know, before sometimes at the TED when you were down a baseline, it was very flat, and so you felt like you were way back away from the field. But it really felt very, even my wife mentioned that it felt like you were, it was a much smaller space that you were in. And it, obviously they've stacked the you've got four levels of seating as opposed to the three that were at Turner Field. So,
but it's so steep, and I don't mean that as a criticism, but it is just so steep that you are on top of the action,
right,
wherever you are.
Right. It's like Neyland Stadium. If anybody's ever been to Neyland Stadium where Tennessee plays football, how that's a very tightly packed, I mean, it's 110,000 people or something like that, but it sort of goes straight up. And that's sort of the way SunTrust Park is. So, yeah, the views are great. Obviously, you tweeted about the lights at a night game. It's so bright.
Love it.
Yeah, you can see everything. There's not darkness in the outfield like there was at Turner Field. Yes, I mean, it's certainly, they've improved dramatically on what was the failings, frankly, of Turner Field. And obviously, the battery adds a lot to that. There's all that sort of people which you never really saw at Turner Field, all those crowds of people, the drum corps that's walking around. So yeah, it's a lot more lively. And even we parked the first day, we parked sort of across the street. There's little things they need to work on still. Obviously, we parked right across from the park the first day, and they only had like one access point where you could cross the street. So we sort of had to walk up the hill a little ways. Today we parked, I think, where you parked on Friday, across 75. And they've got a big, nice bridge with a big, nice pedestrian walking area to get across. And then there's a bridge that takes you right into the front gate of the stadium. So that's, and it really wasn't that bad of a walk. I mean, it's a little ways, but it didn't feel like, because you're sort of, you can see the park right in front of you. So you're sort of, you feel like you're walking into it the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, some other cool little things that they did, the overhang at the top of the stadium over the 400 level. I don't know if you noticed it Friday night, but it's lit with like red and blue on the underside of it, which is very neat looking.
Yeah. I don't think I saw that.
The overhang, again, you know, that goes from what, like, you know, a little past first base around the back to a little past third base. Fireworks shot out of that.
Right.
Kind of like a football stadium, which I thought was very cool. I really like the water cannons at the batter's eye. Like, you know, when there's a strikeout or something big happens, water shoots up just sort of straight into the air. And I'm not being sarcastic. I really think it's kind of neat.
Yep.
You know, some smaller things like all the food stations, they now have monitors on either end of each food station. They're flush up against the facade of the food station so that it's really easy to watch the game. I don't know if you remember, but, you know, at Turner Field, the monitors were like perpendicular to the wall.
Right.
And if you had to be in certain places to really see what was going on. I really think it's just beautiful. My one big complaint, and I was complaining about it on Twitter last night, there's so many video boards, you know, not only the main one, but the one over left, you know, the one over left field, and then things over the bullpens and all the video ribbons around the stadium. And there are less statistics about the hitters than we had at Turner Field. And I'm not talking about like WRC and BAPIP, you know. I'm talking like there's no on-base percentage anymore.
Right.
There's no slugging. There's no what did the batter do in his first at-bat and his second at-bat.
Yeah.
Like that stuff is really useful. I don't want to check my phone every second that a batter comes up.
Well, I will say there's obviously the massive Jumbotron, and then there's a pretty big one in over left field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's really underutilized. I mean, basically it's just a big scoreboard.
Right.
I mean, they could certainly use portions of it.
Scores, right?
Yeah. I mean, they could certainly use portions of it to highlight things like what you're in-game stuff. Because the pitcher stats, it's sort of over the bullpen and it's pretty small, you know, like pitch count and what the last pitch, what kind of pitch, the speed, all that kind of stuff. And it, you know, I mean, they could certainly use that. I noticed today, which was interesting, was the was the batter's clock. I hadn't noticed that from where I sat before. Did you notice that?
Yeah,
when you
in
were
sort
there?
Of center field, a little bit on the left, on the
Right.
left side. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was interesting. I had sort of forgotten that that was instituted, and that was kind of cool to see that that was part of it.
Yeah, the one new thing I saw that they didn't have at the TED was the batter's career stats against the pitcher.
Right.
That's kind of neat. But my God, it fills up a large chunk of real estate on a board. You really could fit a lot more stuff in there. But again, really big, big thumbs up to the Braves. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, and seriously, I mean, everyone, and the Omni Hotel is not open yet, but obviously if people are coming in from out of town, there's hotels all around there. So I don't know about getting there from if you're flying in or something like that. That might not be the easiest thing to do. Hopefully they've worked some of those transportation issues out. But yeah, it's definitely worth, and obviously all the restaurants and everything, it's worth coming in and hanging out for a weekend. You can do a lot of things there.
All right, Kurt, let's move on to the games that are in the books this week. So things started ugly on Tuesday with Cologne getting shelled and then Folti also getting knocked around in game one against the Marlins. But then the Braves proceeded to go on a 4-game win streak.
Woohoo!
A nice 4-1 week. They moved to 1 game below 500 after the first 2 weeks of the season. So, Kurt, very much a tale of two teams between week one and week two. Which do you think is closer to the real 2017 Braves?
That's a tough question. Well, I think this is, I feel like this is the offense, hopefully, that we're going to get. You know, the stats that we talked about last week about the runners in scoring position and how they were so terrible, they completely turned that around. This homestand, they went 9-for-22 with runners in scoring position. So obviously that's a dramatic shift. You noted it quite a bit on Twitter about the effectiveness of the bullpen during this week, which was, you know, they were a little shaky last week. The starting pitching continued to be good. So yeah, I mean, you hope that this is more indicative of what the Braves can be. I mean, certainly it helps that you're playing the Padres and the Marlins, as opposed to the Mets and the Pirates, and that starting pitching and all that kind of stuff that you had to deal with last week. So
yeah, and the Pirates who just swept the Cubs. Like, the Pirates may be better than we think.
Yeah, but I mean, it was good to see guys who had sort of not been hitting, Brandon Phillips, Ender, obviously those guys coming to life. Flowers had a nice week. Adonis had a couple of hits. So, you know, it was nice to see some of those bats come alive, even obviously with Kemp being out until Tuesday or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
Wednesday he's going to be
Wednesday.
Back.
Yeah, so that was big to see. And I mean, maybe this is going to be a big hitter-friendly park. It seemed like
it feels that way.
Yeah, it seemed like that they really enjoyed hitting when they got home.
Yeah, I mean, so many great things this week, particularly as you compare it with the lens of last week. I mean, only 2 errors this week compared to 7 last week, right? Like you said, 12 straight scoreless innings from the bullpen, which started at that first Marlins game up until today, Sunday's game, when Kroll gave up a run, but really in a game that was already, you know, in the bag.
Yeah, and even only 3 in the 16 innings pitch they pitched all week, which that's pretty incredible too.
Yeah. I mean, and you said it, the offense took off, right? I think we didn't mention Markakis, who had a great week. I mean, Freddie had a great week, right? I mean, he OBP'd like over 500. He was hitting over 380, only one home run, but my God, he's just an on-base machine. And this is all getting nothing from Dansby.
Right.
Nothing from Garcia. I mean, they each had important hits. I'm sorry. They each had important hit this week. You know, and it's all without Kemp. Like you said, I mean, the lineup gets so much longer when Kemp is back in there, when you're not, you know, when it's not Chase Darnot or Bonifacio or Jace in the 8 spot because you have Kemp in there. Yeah, I mean, and the starting pitching, right? Aside from Cologne's terrible start in Florida, the starting pitching was either good enough to win or really great.
I mean,
Cologne was great today. Dickey was great on Saturday night. I mean, he gave up those back-to-back homers, but that was it. He got into the 7th, gave up 2 runs. Tehran, it was an ugly, sort of sloggy six innings, two runs, but it was six innings, two runs. You know, it was really good. Garcia only gave up three earned this week. Yeah, I mean, this team could be, I think, is much more this than what we saw in the first week anyway.
Well, I mean, obviously this will be another test this week for them. Obviously they get the Nationals and then they have to go on the road again. They're nobody did them any favors with this early schedule, but so I hope the momentum carries through and we see how they do against better competition. Yeah, but yeah, Markakis, I mean, we never, ever, ever talk about Nick Markakis, and the guy, you know, this is nine straight games. He went 0-for-4 on opening day, and since then he's gone 11-for-33. And yeah, we would, you know, be loath to ever mention Nick Markakis on the show, and that's to our detriment.
And some really, I mean, I can think of two or three really nice diving catches in this week too.
Jack, my oldest son, as if people know who Jack is. Now you do. He kept telling me, oh, he's like, that's going to be on SportsCenter's top catches. Wouldn't leave me alone about that. I was like, yes, you're right. Okay.
All right, Kurt, next up, some more storylines from the week, but first, a quick break. So, as we all know by now, Ender hit four home runs this week, Kurt. Now, he hit a total of 13 over his first three seasons in the majors. So, my question, Kurt, over under on when the PED suspension hits? No, so, you know, there... On Sunday's post-game show, Jerome Drenovich and the other guy, I think it was Brian Jordan and Nick Green, they're making jokes about, oh, you know, I wonder what Ender's eating for breakfast, and oh, and lunch and dinner too. And, you know, I'm laughing and I'm thinking to myself, now these are the jokes that they made when Brady Anderson went crazy and started hitting all those home runs too. I really am kidding. I don't think he's taking PEDs.
Brady Anderson, on the other hand.
Yeah, well, indeed. All right, so Kurt, for real, over-under on his home run total this season, 13.
Well, once again, Jack cued me in on this. If at this rate, he's going to hit 57 home runs this year.
More than Brady Anderson.
Yes. I don't think he's going to hit quite 57, but yeah, it's got to be way over. I mean, you can tell that the short left field or short right field in SunTrust Park is really going to play into left-handed hitters' groove zone.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I'm gonna say over, much over. I would say it's gonna be 18-19 home runs.
It's so hard to wrap my head around, you know, that Ender's gonna hit 14-15-18 home runs. Yeah, but I have to go under. I mean, he hit four this week. It just seems crazy that he won't at least get into the mid-teens. So
you mean over?
Yeah, over. What a strange turn of events this week for that.
And Freddie didn't hit one. Is that correct?
No. Freddie hit one in Florida.
Yeah, but not he hadn't hit one at SunTrust Park yet, other than the one he hit in the exhibition game.
In the exhibition game. No, that's right. That's right. And yeah, I mean, Ender hitting two in that game in Florida. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
All right, Kurt. Dansby has started the season as follows. His slash line is 146, on base 180. Slugging 229. And if he didn't have that one homer, I can't imagine what his slugging would be. He has struck out 11 times in 50 plate appearances. He's left 15 on base. His pitches seen per plate appearance has dropped from 4.13 last year to 3.8 this year. Compared to last year, his line drive percentage is down 4 points. His ground ball percentage is down 13 points. And his fly ball percentage is up 18 points. Kurt, is it time to be worried about Dansby?
I don't know that it's time to be worried about Dansby, but I think it might be time to think about moving him out of the two hole. And I know that obviously the offense is clicking now, so maybe people are going to say now's the time to sort of give him the opportunity to stay there.
And but do you worry about messing with his, you know, with his confidence and psyche, dropping him out of the two hole?
I mean, I don't know.
I mean, he's a rookie.
Yeah. I'm sure that obviously the guy has not faced too many challenges baseball wise in his life, let alone his obviously after that rookie campaign he had last year. So I think it would just be wise to consider dropping him down, maybe swapping him with Brandon Phillips. Not saying you drop him to 8,
right?
But drop him to 6, I guess, when Kemp comes back. Maybe 5th, whatever Phillips is hitting now with Kemp out, because Markakis has moved up to the 4. Right.
Phillips will be 6. Phillips would go back to 6, theoretically, when Kemp gets back. That's where he was in the beginning of the season.
And I think that that's something that they should, especially with the way Ender's hitting, are starting to hit this week. Hopefully that continues. But that's what I would consider doing, is dropping him. I'm not going to worry just yet, because it's obviously still so young in the season and he's still a young guy learning how to hit at the major league level. So not worried, but consider dropping him.
Yeah. I'm not worried yet either, but yeesh. I mean, he has not looked good.
No, he didn't look good again today. Well, he hit in a double play, I think, at least once today. So,
yeah, a lot of strikeouts, a lot of just cans of corn or just easy pop-ups. Look, in 2 more weeks, when he's up to like 100 plate appearances and this is continuing, then I think it gets a little worrisome. But right now it's just, you hope tomorrow's the day that it, it starts to turn around for him.
Would you think about dropping him, or you don't think that's
no? I think it's a fine idea. I think that you take the opportunity, just for appearances, and just for him, you wait until Kemp is back. So it's sort of, hey, look, it's all part of the shuffling of the lineup.
Sure.
And yeah, I think if it's going to happen, that makes sense when to do it.
And he's not going anywhere. I mean, unless he just completely implodes.
No, they're not.
He's
it's not
going
even,
anywhere.
It's not even a thought in anyone's mind. Absolutely. All right, so Kurt, Folti has 2 starts coming up this week after his really weird start to the season. Getting squeezed by the ump in terrible weather in that start in Pittsburgh, and then getting a start skipped coming in relief in Florida. So 2 starts this week, Kurt. His over-under on earned runs this week, 6.
Well, I'm just looking at that relief appearance he had in Miami, and I know that he gave up 2 runs, but it was a home run that he gave up. I mean, if he had started and lasted, I'm sure that he was probably not going to pitch more than a couple innings in that game.
Yeah.
But if they had pitched him out the rest of the game and he had sort of pitched that way through the rest of that game, we would be so excited about what we had seen about Folti in that game. I mean, he 34 pitches, 23 strikes, 4 Ks, only 3 hits, no base on balls. So he gave up the home run. He's a power hitter. He's going to give up home runs. That's just going to be part of the deal. I think this week is going to be a good week for Folti, and I'm going to go under on the 6 earned runs. I feel good about it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the relief appearance, while the numbers were not great in terms of, giving up a home run, giving up 2 runs in just 2 innings, the thing that concerned me about that was his body language after he gave up that home run was just awful. A lot of stalking around the mound, just slumped shoulders. Like, my one big concern is that all the gains that we saw he made mentally and otherwise in the spring, what if it was wiped out by that awful start in Pittsburgh and giving up that home run in Florida? I mean, I hope he's made of much more than that.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a little crazy how down he got about that home run in Florida, and it gives me a little pause. So I'm going to go over. I say it's going to be more like 7, but hopefully a big turnaround for him this week.
Well, he needs to talk to Cologne, because they were talking to Cologne today after his start today, and they were asking him about his last start and how he, and he's like, well, it's just my next start. I don't even think about that one. That one's done, and you move on. And
right.
And obviously that's what has allowed him to have such a long and successful career. And that you talk to any of those guys or hear from any of those guys like Glavin, all those guys are like, and that was the big thing with Smoltz is it weighed on him and it ate at him and all that kind of stuff. And he couldn't let it go. And then when he was young and you saw the results, and then he met with that psychologist, and I think he learned to temper himself, and he's now a Hall of Fame pitcher. So maybe that's what Folti needs to go see the doctor.
All right, Kurt, let's move on to Shot in the Dark, our predictions for the coming week. And we'll start by looking back at last week's, and we will start with our listener Shot in the Dark. It was our first of the year from Bubba Croft on Twitter, who predicted that Colon and Garcia would both go six innings or more, both with wins, resulting in a sweep of the Marlins. So not so much, obviously. Colon and Garcia went 4 and 5 innings, respectively. Neither got the win. Bubba also predicted that Swanson would hit 300 or more with 1 triple and 4 RBI. And, of course, not even close. He batted an even 100 with 1 ribby. So thanks, Bubba. All right, so our predictions from last week. Ham, cheating, as he does often in this game, changed his Kemp-related prediction after he went on the DL and moved it to Dansby hitting 2 homers and batting under 250. He certainly got the second part right. Kurt, you had Dansby and Ender both hitting over 400. Ender hit exactly 400. Dansby did not. And I predicted that Freddie would hit 4 homers this week. He only hit 1. So no winners this week. We'll see if we can do better this week. So Hammy is predicting that Fulte will go 2-0 and give up a total of 4 earned or less. So, Kurt, how about you?
So Ham is full on the Fulte train.
Full on Fulte, yeah.
Staying with the Fs, I am going with Freddie Freeman. I think he's going to bat over 350 this week with 10 extra base hits, 10 RBI.
That would be awesome. All right, I'm going that the Braves score at least 5 earned against Strasburg.
Our old friend Strasburg.
But is it going to be? Be fantastic for him to get off to a horrendous start at the new park?
It is going to be hot. It is going to be hot this week.
All right, I like it. All right, folks, don't forget to get your shots in the dark in before first pitch on Monday. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show. Okay, Kurt, the week ahead. Let's look at the pitching matchups. But first, let's remark that my prediction of 4-1 this week was right on the nose.
Nailed it.
Yep, despite how much you guys made fun of me. All right.
Nailed that too.
All right, 7 games this week. 1 more against the Padres, 3 against the Nationals, all at home, and then back on the road for 3 at Philadelphia. All right, so against the Padres, it's Garcia against Jared Weaver and his 4.91 ERA. The Padres' starting pitching rotation is just absurd.
Yeah, they don't have any other cast-offs from the Braves that
they can throw out there. My God. Okay. So next up, 3 with the Nats. And you mentioned it a little bit. How pumped are you to really, you know, see what this team can do against the odds-on favorite to win the NL East? I can't wait for it.
You mean the Phillies?
All right. So first up with the Nats, we got Fulte versus Scherzer and his 2.13. Next up, Julio versus Joe Ross, who's making his first start of the season. And then Dickey versus Strasburg and his 3.0. On to Philly, where it'll be Colon versus Jeremy Hellickson and his 1.59. Next, Garcia's second start of the week against Jared Eichhoff and his 2.75. And then the week finishes a little easier, Fulte in his second start of the week against Zach Eflin and his 5.54. So Curtis, Ham predicts 4-3 this week. I'm at 4-3 as well. What about you?
It's the hat trick.
Yeah.
4-3. I got to see that pitch this week. I got to see Jules Shaken, Trevor Cahill, and Christian Bethencourt.
It really is bizarre who the Padres are trotting out there.
And it's amazing that what their schedule, I mean, their record was coming in. I don't know who they've played to this point.
The Padres the Padres opened the season against the Dodgers.
Well, they had a winning record coming into Atlanta, didn't they?
I don't remember.
Come on, Steve.
I know.
You're the research guy.
I know. All right, folks, that is the show. Remember, we are at our new home of Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. As always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access our shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk. your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.